Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Inside Scoop Live, the live audio program brought to you by ReaderViews.com. I'm your host today, Juanita Watson, and I have invited on the program Fred and Kim Goldman, the father and sister of Ron Goldman, who was tragically murdered along with Nicole Brown Simpson in Brentwood, California, June of 1994. So last year in 2006, HarperCollins announced the publication of a book in which O.J. Simpson told how he hypothetically would have committed the murders. In response to public outrage that Simpson stood to profit from these crimes, HarperCollins canceled the book. A Florida bankruptcy court awarded the rights to the Goldmans in August 2007 to partially satisfy the unpaid civil judgment, which has risen with interest to over $38 million. Amidst much controversy and criticism, the Goldman family has recently published If I Did It, Confessions of the Killer, which they view as OJ's confession and have worked hard to ensure that the public will read this book and learn the truth. This book is the original manuscript approved by O.J. Simpson with up to 14,000 words of key additional commentary. So I'm just very happy to have the Goldmans on the phone today to talk about their journey that they've been on to get the rights to this book, the confusion that has been created in the media around this story, and then their opinion on the recent events that have O.J. back in the spotlight. So welcome, welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Fred and Kim.
Thank you. Thanks for having me and us.
Thank you for having us.
Great. So If I Did It came out in September of this year, just a few months back. And how have sales been so far?
The book has done well. I think slowly but surely people have begun to read the book and others have learned about it. And I think that what will ultimately happen is people will read the book and discover that this is, in fact, the equivalent of a confession, and they'll learn in his own words what kind of monster he is.
So, Kim, do you feel that having this book at this point on shelves has brought some sense of peace or vindication for your family?
Well, peace and vindication to me are two totally different things, I guess. Vindication, I guess, in the sense that he worked really hard to not have us acquire this book, and we were successful in beating him in that struggle. I guess there's some vindication in that regard. But also, more importantly, I think, you know, he did this for his own meal ticket, and he did this, you know, for his own ego, and we were able to turn it around on him and remind the world, as my dad said, of the brutality in which he committed those crimes and the fact that here we are 13 years later, he's finally admitting it.
So in 1995, O.J. was found not guilty of the murders, but then in 97, he was found liable for, I believe it was willful and wrongful cause of death for Ron and Nicole. How, you know, this kind of set in somewhat confusion for the public, I think, right there. What was the difference in those charges?
The difference being very simply that one is a criminal charge, the state filing charges against him, and fortunately he was found not guilty. The second, the civil trial, is us filing a suit against him, and that jury ultimately did the right thing and found him responsible for Ron's murder.
What was the amount that was ordered in that judgment to both families, your family and the Brown family?
I believe it was $19 million to our family and $19.5 million to our family and $12.5 million to the estate of Nicole Brown, which are the killer's kids.
And you,
so $33.5 million between the two families.
And you actually, I heard this in what you just said, you actually don't use OJ's name. You refer to him as the killer?
Yes, I haven't uttered his name since 94 probably.
Is that right? So tell me about that. Why not use his name?
I guess because when I refer to people by their first name, and in my world, that means that there is some level of I don't know, respect or formality or personalization, I guess. And I think calling him by his name gives him some credit in my world that I don't think he deserves. And it's very hard to hear his name because it's just too casual. I mean, even when you hear reporters refer to him just by his first name as opposed to his first and last name, there's a level of casual feeling about him, and it frustrates me. And I think that he's a killer. He murdered my brother. He stabbed him in the heart, and he nearly decapitated Nicole. That's what he is.
Mm-hmm. Right. And additionally, I would add that when people use his name, which are his initials, I think they think of him as this ex-big deal football player. And the bottom line is that's not who he really is. Who he really is a vicious murderer.
Mm. That had to have been for the public the biggest hurdle to get over, because there was this image that basically all of America had of him. And so it would be very hard to, I mean, it just seems like a huge hurdle, a huge leap, but I think with this book coming out, I mean, the illusion is being shattered at this point.
Well, I think the illusion was shattered when you started hearing him reports about how he beat up Nicole, and when in the criminal case when all of the evidence was mounted against him. I don't think it's taken 13 years for the illusion to wear off. I mean, quite frankly, I didn't even know who he was before. I don't care about that stuff. I don't really care about people who are celebrities. I still think at the end of the day, you're still who you are, and you're still capable of, you know, making mistakes like everybody else was. He just happened to make a very big one that was very public. I guess from hearing other people talk about the fact that they can't believe him, you know, he was so beloved. At the end of the day, he ran a football down a football field.
Yeah.
You know, deep inside, he was still a killer. So.
Mm-hmm.
And additionally, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's sad that we judge people in theory by their occupation. They're a football player, they're an actor, whomever. I'd like to think that we judge people by something deeper, who they are, what they are, the kind of quality of human being that they are, not just by their job.
Mm-hmm. Very true. So, Fred, take us from the point where the civil action, the judgment was made. Take us from that point to O.J.'s move to Florida, what you were doing in the interim, why he moved to Florida. Take us to that point.
Well, once we had the judgment, there was a quick realization that judgment is simply a piece of paper. And the court gives you the piece of paper, basically says that that individual owes you a specific amount of money as compensation for what he did, and then you're on your own. The system is done with you. It's up to you, the holder of the judgment, to find some way to make that individual responsible and collect, so to speak, on that judgment. He moved to Florida for the sole purpose of avoiding the judgment. It's a debtor-friendly state. And that's why he's there. He's vowed numerous times, as has his attorneys, or as have his attorneys, to make certain that they help him avoid the judgment. He's never going to willingly honor that judgment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's our responsibility, our promise to ourselves, our promise to Ron, that we would force him in any legal way that we can to honor that judgment. That's the only way we're ever going to get any measure of justice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how did you first hear about the HarperCollins announcement in 2006 that they would be releasing O.J.'s book?
I heard it from the National Enquirer. A friend of mine who had a copy of it or saw it or something called me and read it to me. And I believe I called my dad afterwards. And we didn't really think much of it at the time, truthfully. And we kind of blew it off and never really attached too much attention to it. And then I think it was probably 2 weeks later that the bigger story broke, mm-hmm. that it was HarperCollins and Judith Regan. that were publishing it with him. I think both my dad and I, or I can't speak for him, I thought that it was, you know, probably going to be more of a back alley, you know, printing publication, you know, that I just really, you know, he does so many stupid things, you know, over the course of the year. He does a lot of, over the course of the years, he's done, you know, all these ridiculous things to get himself back in the media. And I guess I just sort of assumed this was another one of those. And then when the truth of the story came out that he was paid and, you know, upwards of close to $1 million for the book, and then it was HarperCollins and Judith Regan, obviously the rest is what it was.
Unfolded from there. So it was all over the news programs. And, you know, eventually the book was pulled, and it really seemed to be, you know, a great victory for both of your families. And I think this is where a lot of the confusion and the criticism probably begins, because then not more than a year later, your family is publishing O.J.'s hypothetical confession, and then there seems to be a split that's happened between both of your families. So walk us through that, how you ended up with the rights to this book.
Well, first of all, if we had it to do again today, we would do the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
We spoke out against the book for several reasons. One, we wanted to stop him from making money on the murders of Ron and Nicole. And two, we were concerned as to what the contents of the book were, fearful that it might be the equivalent of a how-to manual. Ultimately, we learned that he had already been paid close to $700,000 and was expecting more. He had another $300,000 coming as an advance. So unfortunately, he'd already been paid. Additionally, once we were able to acquire a copy of the manuscript, we discovered that, no, it was not a manual on how to commit murder, but it's a read that once you go through it, you have very little reason to think it's anything but an admission of guilt, a confession.
Mm-hmm.
And we levied on the rights to the book in order to prevent him from ever gaining any additional money. And in doing so, we ultimately, because he and his kids, who had formed a fraudulent company, had formed a company to move the money from HarperCollins to the killer to avoid the judgment. And in doing so, they ultimately filed bankruptcy of that company in order to avoid, to stop us from getting the rights to the book.
Mm.
And it is through bankruptcy that the rights were awarded to us, because the asset, the rights, had to be turned into money, according to the bankruptcy court. And the bankruptcy court gave us the option to be involved in that. We chose to do that because we knew that there was a very good chance that the rights could ultimately have gone back to the killer, and we would have been right back to square one.
Mm-hmm.
So we got involved and promised the court that we would do everything we could to monetize that asset.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to add, just so that there's no confusion, people often think that we had a choice to not publish the book, and that's not an option. When my dad says, you know, they gave us an option to participate, it was really, the option was, do you want to help have control over this book? It wasn't that you can either publish it or not publish it. Not publishing it was never an option. The asset was ordered to be monetized no matter who did it.
Oh.
We chose to participate in that because we wanted to have control over it, so that we could at least make sure that the message was with as much integrity and dignity for Ron and Nicole that we could have. So it was never that, oh, if we participate, the book's going to be shelved. That was never. People are confused, I think, by that.
I think that is an incredibly important point, because that's the first time I've ever heard that. And that really, I mean, that is just not something that's out there in the media. So I'm really glad
right.
that you were able to voice that right now, because
But the point that my dad makes about us promising the court, that the court basically wanted to ensure that we would do whatever we could to maximize, you know, the earning potential of that asset, you know, because their responsibility, ironically, is to pay down all the killer's debts. Mm-hmm. So by publishing this book, we are helping him satisfy other debts that he has, including some attorney's fees that he walked out on, and as well as the estate of Nicole Brown is going to benefit from us publishing this book. Mm-hmm. And we're also paying down a portion of our judgment with our publication of this book, which to me is incredibly ironic. But
I think it is also fascinating to recognize one additional fact, and that is when the killer sat down with his kids to discuss the book, they all signed off on it, all approved of it, and all expected to make money. When the $700,000 or so ultimately channeled its way down to the killer, he used the money to pay off back taxes, bills, buy a car, etc. And as best as we know, he gave no money to his kids.
Mm-hmm.
Now, through bankruptcy and through the fact that some of the money that is generated by the publication of this book, monies go back to the bankruptcy court, and one of the judgment creditors is the estate of Nicole Brown, her two kids. They now will actually gain some money from our publication of the book when their father did it.
Okay. So how did you find out this corporation that OJ formed with his kids, Lorraine Brooke Associates? How did you find out about this company?
Sorry. How do we find out about? I think when we levied on the book rights, or we levied on the contract or something. I forget. It was just it came out in some paperwork. I mean, and we found out that it was Lorraine Brooke Associates, which are the two middle names of his two oldest daughters, Sydney and Arnell. And we found out that was the company that was being used as the cover up, so to speak. And quite honestly, that's not the first time he's done that. We've uncovered other companies that he's done to achieve the same goal, which is putting money into his pocket and avoiding the judgment. Mm-hmm. And it's perfectly legal, mm-hmm. which is, for us, it's even more frustrating.
Absolutely.
Perfectly legal.
Have the children talked to media, or have they come out and made any statements about the formation of this company?
No.
They haven't at all?
No. I think Arnell, who's the president of Lorraine Brooke, when her deposition, we deposed her, and she was the one that said, you know, all the kids sat down and we discussed the book. We sat down around the kitchen table. We discussed the book. We all agreed to do it. And, you know, my younger brother and sister, Justin and Sydney, signed off the signatories on the company. She confirmed it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Why do you think OJ wrote this book to begin with?
Well, my personal view is that he always needs to be the one in charge. He also always needs to be the one that has what he perceives as the last word. I think he wrote it, at least from my perspective, I think he wrote it so that he could make certain that everybody knew exactly what took place. And additionally, I think he did it for money, most assuredly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he did it in some way in his own strange mind to glorify himself. He starts off in the book by saying, forget everything you knew about this case, et cetera. I know better than anyone what happened.
Right.
And he's right. He does.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you have anything to add to that, Kim?
I would echo what my dad said. I've always thought that part of the reason he did this was to sort of correct how the rest of us, you know, might have gotten it wrong. He was quoted in an interview as saying, you know, I hate when other people speak for me. You know, I wanted an opportunity to speak for myself. So, you know, and I think that he wanted to, in some way, glorify himself in his relationship with Nicole. You know, if you read the book, he talks about himself in this, you know, angelic state for the entire book that, you know, he's trying to save her from herself kind of thing. You know, he wants to elevate himself to that, you know, above it all mentality. And I think that he wanted to, you know, get his voice out there.
Mm-hmm. It really is very strange because in his so-called confession, hypothetical confession, you know, he does really portray Nicole as being completely out of control and himself basically doing no wrong. I mean, it really, It's very strange.
Well, but those are the classic signs of an abuser.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, I mean, he points the fingers at her completely for, you know, I mean, when we first read it, I mean, my belief was, okay, he's justifying why she deserves to die. I mean, that's what the point of this book was, as to why she deserved it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the way I interpreted it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's pretty sick.
I'd like to know both of your reactions upon reading the book for the first time and going through, especially where he is talking about that confrontation in the courtyard with Nicole and Ron. What were your reactions to reading this for the first time?
Well, for me, if I can, I started it several times and had a hard time getting into it. But finally, when I did, I found very disturbing, because I realized that I was reading the words of the monster that murdered my son. And needless to say, by the time we got to the specific chapter in which he talks about murdering Ron and Nicole, that was a real struggle for me and very painful.
Mm-hmm.
It was painful for the obvious reasons, and it was additionally painful for me to listen to him review, if you would, how he taunted Ron and how he made fun of Ron.
Mm-hmm.
This man is a monster, a piece of trash. Calling him a murderer isn't enough.
I don't know. I don't know that I have much more to add. I think... the first time I read it, or I skimmed it, I was looking to see if there was anything descriptive in there, you know, because all the criticism was that we were publishing a murder manual. And then when I finally sat down in the quiet of my own space, I was incredibly moved by that chapter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, it didn't deviate from the criminal case. I already knew the information, but hearing the killer sort of recount all of the emotion from that night and all of the excitement, and I don't mean that in a positive way, obviously, but like all of the energy that was happening, that was difficult for me, because I've always wondered, you know, about those last couple of minutes of Ron's life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How close to the truth do you feel that text and that recollection is? Do you believe that is pretty close to the truth?
I do. You know, the only thing that was new information for me was the dog, the Akita was wagging his tail. You know, I guess it comes down to this for me at the end of the day. An innocent person wouldn't write a book like this.
Mm-hmm.
An innocent person wouldn't sit down and write a hypothetical about how he would have killed the mother of his children and an innocent person. So I walked into it believing that he was confessing. So everything that I read, I came from the mindset that it was pretty damn close to what happened that night. Of course, is there probably some current things that he, you know, attached to it? I'm sure, but I don't really know exactly. But for me, I'm reading it from a place of, this is his confession, and I'm going to take what he's saying as the truth.
Okay.
Well, and additionally, I think it's important to recognize that he does not contradict virtually any evidence at all. As a matter of fact, he in some ways explains things that were unknown. He makes a point of commenting about the route that he took back to his home from Nicole's.
Very detailed.
And that how some thought it was one way, but he's going to clarify it. He told you exactly how he drove home.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, I think for me, his commentary about being covered in blood, and that at some point he took off his clothes before getting into his car, took off his outerwear, and bundled it all together, which for me would explain why, in fact, there wasn't even more blood in the car. He is so arrogant that he ultimately ends up telling you virtually everything because, quote-unquote, he knows better than anyone, and he wants to be sure you know that.
Mm.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Are you an author looking for another way to make your book available to your reading audience? If so, how about entering the revolutionary world of ebooks for Amazon Kindle? Amazon recently launched their new ebook reader that is now sweeping the masses by providing not only the ebook reader limitless possibilities, but it also now provides the opportunity for all authors to have their book available in the ebook format. The Kindle is the newest book reading device to hit the market. Let ReaderViews help you get your book on Amazon in just a few easy steps. You provide us the information and we'll upload it for you. At the same time, we will optimize your ebook by ensuring that your book is compatible and looks great on the new Kindle Reader. For more information, please go to ReaderViews.com and click on the Services for Authors in the top menu bar. There you will see the services we provide, as well as the link for your Kindle ebook production. The success of your book is our greatest interest. Go to ReaderViews.com today.
And now back to Inside Scoop Live with your host, Juanita Watson.
What do you make of this mysterious second person that he talks about, and they use the name Charlie? What do you make of that whole aspect of this?
Alter ego.
Uh-huh.
I believe it's just his, you know, subconscious state of mind that, you know, was trying to tell him, you know, like the good and the evil, you know? I mean, I think that was probably a play. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a killer. I don't know how your mind works in those scenarios, but that's my belief, is that it was just an alter ego.
Mm.
And additionally, along those same lines, you know, he had an opportunity, if he wanted to, using this Charlie individual, he had an opportunity to place the blame on this Charlie, but he didn't.
Mm.
He never blamed the crimes on Charlie at all. He took the knife, or was given the knife, so to speak, from Charlie, and he ended up with all the blood on him.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this is him saying, I know better than anybody, and I'm certainly not going to give the, strangely enough, glory to somebody else.
Mm, good point. So bizarre. So the prologue of this book is written by Pablo Fenves, who was the ghostwriter to O.J.'s original book. And really, I mean, this chapter, his account of working with O.J. is well worth the price of this book itself. I mean, it's so telling. What are your thoughts on Pablo's account of O.J. and his confirmation that O.J. signed off and approved every change and authorized this final version?
I don't know. I mean, I think that I appreciate that Pablo was willing to do that. I know that he was under some attack, you know, for participating in this project. I think for my father and I, it's different because we've been dealing with the killer and his whole team of people, you know, for the last 13 years. So to hear him recount how that went down, there was nothing new there for me. I mean, it sort of was like, oh, of course that was going to be. Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, I know that. You know, like I wasn't shocked by it, and partly because we've been dealing with it, on such an intimate level for so long. But I do think for people that don't know too much about this case, or continue to know too much about this case, I think that was probably an eye-opening experience for them to see how he is and to have other people account for his behavior. You know, he claims that he's, you know, loved all over the country and that he's God's gift and, you know, he's, you know, always in the right and blah, blah, blah. And so I think that having Pablo sit down and tell him, you know, how his mood shifted and how he would erupt and come back down and the swearing and the, you know, I mean, that's who we believe him to be, so.
Mm-hmm. It is really a descriptive account. For me, it was very telling, very, very telling. Did you have anything to add to that, Fred?
No, I think as Kim said, Pablo virtually verifies everything that we've known for years, that he's a monster. He thinks he can do no wrong. Bottom line, believes that everybody else gets it wrong and only he knows best.
So I also really think it's interesting in Pablo's account how he recalls a conversation with Barbara Walters, who was trying to get an interview with O.J. As he was trying to release this book. Barbara had called Pablo the next day saying that really this account was one of the most chilling things that she had ever read. And I've heard that many, many people have the same comments after reading this book. What do you think it is about this story that is the most shocking to readers?
I don't know. You know, to be honest with you, I guess maybe because I'm too close to it. For us, I've never been able to totally wrap my head around the fact that a country still is so passionate and so attached to this story. I don't know what it is, if it's him, if it's that he got away with it, if it's, you know, that the blanket was pulled back over our justice system. I don't really know what it is that really still attached people to this. Maybe it's his arrogance, you know, of him walking around and still kind of snubbing his nose at us and the system and the community. And this book is just another, you know, opportunity for him to say, hey, look what I can do. You can't, you know, I'm going to confess. Double jeopardy, you know, is in play here, so you can't charge me again with these crimes. And look what I could do. I can make $1 million for it before anybody knows about it. And I don't really care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I think there's all of those components that are added here. Again, for me, reading the book, I personally didn't learn any new information because I'm so close to it. But I think for people that have not been following it, have not read every news article, have not seen every interview, there's probably a lot of information there that people were alarmed to hear him recount. And then again, like I said earlier, you know, an innocent person, most of us would not sit down and write a book about how we would kill people.
Yeah.
You just, it's not unheard of.
Yeah.
You know, our minds don't think that way. So I think there's a component of that, you know, people are like, wow, he really did this.
Mm-hmm.
It's additionally important to realize that this is a chance to listen to the words of this monster himself. He tells you the kind of person he is. Not us telling you. He tells you himself the kind of person he is. The fact that he's an abuser, the fact that he's a narcissist, a sociopath. He tells you that. He'll convince you very completely of the kind of person that he really is.
So how is the split between your family and the Brown family, specifically Denise? I know that they're in the media, that there was a lot of controversy around that. How do the families stand today?
Well, you know, truthfully, our two families have been connected by this crime for the last 13 years. We've both been grieving families, and we deal with our grief in different ways. You know, we've always been proud of Denise's efforts to, you know, make a movement on behalf of domestic violence. That's been important to them, and we applaud her efforts in doing that. Our efforts have been to, you know, protect victims' rights and to try to ensure some justice for Ron and Nicole by pursuing the judgment. That's been important to us. The fact that Denise has come out so opposed to what we're doing, I guess my father and I are trying to find some room to give to her, because I think that there is some lack of education in terms of why we got here. I mean, as far as we know today, she's still not read the book. And so I don't know how someone can speak so angrily about something that they haven't participated in. I also think that she's in a tough spot. She's not going to be able to come out against her niece and nephew, who have been, it's documented that they signed off on the deal. I mean, she for a while was very, you know, accusatory towards my father and I, that we were causing them pain. And then when we found out that they signed off on it, you know, that argument sort of fell by the wayside a little bit. So I'm trying to afford her as much leeway room as I can. I feel for her. She's in a tough spot. I just wish that her anger was pointed more directly at the people that caused this. My dad and I did not cause this. This is our legal right to pursue this judgment. It's my father's fiduciary responsibility to pursue this judgment on behalf of Ron's estate. And this is our right as just as public, as community people, that we have a right to pursue our judgment that was awarded to us. And I feel very comfortable that this was the appropriate path to take for our family. And it might not be for theirs, and that's okay.
Did you have anything to add to that? I mean, it must be a hard...
No, Kim said it incredibly well.
Yes, yes. Okay.
But yes, to answer your question, it is incredibly hard because the attention, you know, was... The attention on our two families was ridiculous. That's not what this should have been about. I mean, we got distracted by the so-called infighting between the two families. My father and I have no ill will towards Denise and her family. We're pursuing an action that we feel is appropriate to us. And the fact that the media picked up on that, we get it. But at the end of the day, again, our energy should be focusing on the person that created this, and that's the killer.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that the media just really kind of made a mess out of this whole story?
it's a mixed bag. I think for the most part, you know, were it not for the media to be so deeply involved in the trial, there every single day, cameras there every single day, I don't think that the numbers of people who thought that there was an injustice here would have been anywhere near that. I think that at times the media gets off on the wrong tangent, worrying about things that have no purpose, like Kim just said a moment ago. But the bottom line is, I think that the vast majority of people know him to be a murderer. And were it not for the media, that wouldn't have been the case.
Mm-hmm. So what do you make of OJ's current legal battle? And I don't even know where it's been left at this point. I haven't tuned in to it in the news lately. But what do you think of this new twist so many years later that he is, you know, front and center in trouble once again?
Well, you hit the nail on the head right there. He's in trouble once again. I mean, this is not the first time that he's been in trouble. Every year or two, he's doing something to create some drama around himself. This is not the first time he's been in court and accused of something since his acquittal. So for us, you know, when we first heard about it, we were in New York, and we kind of laughed it off, not really, I think, attributing too much attention to it, just because we didn't know the level of severity behind it. So at this point, you know, I can't get ahead of myself. I don't want to get too excited about the possibility of him spending time in jail, because I've been disappointed before on that note. So I am just going to sit back and be patient and hope that the Las Vegas Police Department moves through this in a methodical fashion, and that they don't jump the gun, no pun intended, mm-hmm. and that they, you know, just cross every T and dot every I, and so that we can be ensured that there's nothing to come back up on appeals, and that if in fact he is guilty, then he does what needs to be done, and that's, you know, be jailed. Mm-hmm. So I just don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree, and I think that when all is said and done, I don't think we can lose track of the fact that even if he does go to jail, he's still never been aptly punished for murdering Ron and Nicole.
Mm-hmm. Will that be something that the two of you pursue until that does happen, for as long as that will take, that he, you know, that you will be watching or waiting and working towards having him admit to this crime?
Well, we're going to be after him till he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as that. We're not going to let up just because he's in trouble in Vegas. The fact is that we're going to continue to make every effort we can to get some semblance of justice for the horrible crimes that he committed.
So putting this book out there, you know, it really, I know that one of your intentions was to get the truth out there, to get his words, his point of view out there. Did you have any other hopes for having this book on the shelves?
I think I know that my father and I feel very strongly about if you know, most of the book is written about how his relationship was with Nicole and how abusive that relationship is. And so if there's an opportunity for a woman to read it and identify herself with Nicole and in some way get the courage and the strength to get out of that relationship, then, you know, we've done a good thing. And I think, I hope that, you know, people walk away with some hope in that regard if, in fact, they are in that situation. You know, my father and I also added a victim's resource section to this book, and we also are donating a portion of the proceeds to the Ron Goldman Foundation for Justice so that we can help other victims of crime sort of navigate themselves through this horrific process. So, mm-hmm. you know, again, our contribution to this book was to, in some way, hopefully, you know, attach some level of dignity and integrity to what happened to Ron and Nicole. And the killer doing it, it would have been sensationalistic and it would have been just more disgusting than it already is. And so I hope that something positive comes from it. As difficult as this process was, it was not an easy decision for us to do this. So we worked really hard to try to make something positive out of it.
Mm-hmm. So how can listeners find out more about the Ron Goldman Foundation? Do you have a website?
Yep, you just said it, rongoldmanfoundation.org.
Okay.
Or and I think Ron Goldman Foundation.
Sorry. What kind of work specifically are you doing with the foundation?
Well, just so you know, and then Kim will further answer, the foundation was just recently started. As Kim said, we're going to donate some proceeds from the book to the foundation. The publisher is, the literary agent is, so the work has not literally begun, but it will, and Kim can give you the details.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, no, that, I mean, you know, it's in its infancy stages, and mm-hmm. so, you know, my father and I, for the last 13 years, have been volunteering our time to speak out on behalf of victims' rights, and this is the first time that we have been able to, and in it from a financial position, to be able to, you know, try to contribute and help in some way. So we have some ideas of how we want to further assist, and I think it's more partnering with other organizations that are doing such amazing work on behalf of victims' rights. You know, it's just there's so much that's been happening the last couple of months, but I'm excited and I'm proud of the foundation.
Wonderful. Yeah, everything did pretty much happen within the last two or three months, so I'm sure that the whole process has been overwhelming for your family.
Yeah.
Yes. No kidding.
Yeah. Just because our family, you know, and our situation is on television doesn't mean that we're the only ones to deal with this. I mean, I think it's necessary to point out that families struggle through these kinds of situations on a daily basis, that our system is not designed to protect the victims, but it's designed to protect the criminals. And so when we're left in a situation like our family, for example, we're left to our own devices. And I think, you know, this is an unfortunate state of affairs on our system, and hopefully, you know, we can shed some light on that and do some good to help other families.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think along the lines of what Kim just said, you know, we are without question not the only family that has gone through this. The same year that Ron was murdered, there was approximately 21,000 other individuals that were murdered. And every year since, you're talking about enormous numbers. Today, murder rates about 17,000 every year. You're talking about numbers that are enormously greater than the people that are lost in wars in our country.
Mm-hmm.
And those people, those families that go through the pain of losing someone to violence, those are the families that we have to think about and be concerned about in our so-called justice system, not the monsters that commit the crime.
Absolutely. What are the families that you've talked to that have read this book that, you know, have had family members in domestic abuse situations? What are their comments on this story and the point of view of an abuser?
We've had an enormous amount of email coming into the website. You know, again, once people understood our reasoning for doing it, people were very supportive A lot of, I had one woman in particular tell me that she, you know, appreciated that we were courageous enough to do this because it takes courage to fight your assailant, no matter what, what, if you're in an abusive relationship or if you're in this kind of situation, the courage it takes to do that. And she appreciated it because she was reminded of the courage it took her to leave her abusive husband. So, you know, I also think that, that victims' families that have been on the receiving end of an injustice like our family were have all been incredibly supportive and have said, go get him, keep on him. You know, you can't let him ever get away with it. And I think that unless you've walked in our shoes, you can't completely embrace the struggle. And I don't fault anybody for that, but that's just, you know, this is a commitment that we've made, and this is a necessary thing for us to be doing to make sure that he's held accountable. And I think that anybody that's in our boat where they're criminal or they're accused or whatever is walking free or benefiting or profiting from their crime, you do whatever you can to stop that from happening because it's not right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the support in that regard has been phenomenal, and I'm incredibly appreciative on behalf of our family for that.
Mm, wonderful. Well, you know, our time is actually coming to an end here, and I just want to thank you so much for talking with us today on Inside Scoop Live. It's been a wonderful interview. I think you've clarified a lot of points that have been left in a state of confusion in the media right now, and I just wanted to let you both share any final thoughts that you'd like to before we end today. Fred, did you want to start?
I think the only thing that's important to always remember is that we would like to see a justice system that cares more about the victims in this country than it does about the criminals and the accused. And unfortunately, right now, the term criminal justice system seems to very clearly define the system. Perhaps if it was called the victims justice system and clearly was more concerned about victims, we'd all be in a better place as a country. Victims in this country account for enormous toll on our society, both physically and financially, and a system that works hard to ensure that violent people are put back on the street is not the kind of system that I think most people in this country would like. So as people get involved in the pain and or reading about the kind of trauma that occurs from violent crime, hopefully they'll begin to speak out, as do victims already in this country, to ultimately end up with a system that's there for the vast majority of us instead of the few that commit all the crime.
Mm-hmm. You're incredibly articulate, Dad. I echo everything that you just said. I also want to add, you know, specifically as it relates to this particular book, that I hope that the next time someone goes to shake his hand or get an autograph from him, that they are reminded that those are the hands that killed two people. And, you know, I hope that our efforts and the efforts of this country to ensure that justice prevails, that he is pushed into a state of exile and, you know, that he just sort of falls by the wayside. That would be fantastic for us.
Wonderful final thoughts. Thank you so much for talking with us today. Much sympathy for your loss, and we certainly support you and your endeavors for victims of crime. Thank you so much for your time today, Fred and Kim.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Yes, thank you very much. Well, there you go, listeners. This has been Fred and Kim Goldman, the book, If I Did It, Confessions of a Killer. It's in stores now. Check it out and support the endeavor of the Ron Goldman Foundation. Thanks so much for listening to Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson.
Audio engineer for Inside Scoop Live is Victor Volkman.
And until next time.